Hi, this is Mrs. English, and I'm going to be reading to you today from Richmond Lattimore's translation of Homer's Iliad. We are reading Book 11. In Book 11, we will see the wounding of three of the major Greek warriors, Agamemnon, then Diomedes, and then Odysseus. By the end of this book, things will be looking pretty bleak for the Greeks. Book 11. Now Dawn rose from her bed, where she lay by haughty Tithonus. And Tithonus, if you look him up in your Iliad glossary, you'll see he's Priam's brother. The goddess of the dawn is married to immortal Priam's brother. Dawn rose from her bed, where she lay by haughty Tithonus, to carry her light to men and to immortals. Zeus sent down in speed to the fast ships of the Achaeans the wearisome goddess of hate, probably Eris here, holding in her hands the portent of battle. It's hard to say what she holds, the Aegis or something. She took her place on the huge hollowed black ship of Odysseus, which lay in the middle, so that she could cry out to both flanks, either as far as the shelters of Telamonian Aias or to those of Achilles, since these had hauled their balanced ships up at the ends, certain of their manhood and their hands' strength. There the goddess took her place, and cried out a great cry, and terrible and loud, and put strength in all the Achaeans' hearts, to go on tirelessly with their fighting of battles. And now battle became sweeter to them than to go back in their hollow ships to the beloved land of their fathers. And Atreus's son cried out aloud, and drove the Achaeans to gird them, while he himself put the shining bronze upon him. And now, beginning with line 17, we have one of the first instances of arming a hero. First, he placed along his legs the beautiful greaves, linked with silver fastenings to hold the greaves at the ankles. Afterwards, he girt on about his chest the corslet that Cinyras had given him once to be a guest present. This would be a Xenia present, and Cinyras was a legendary king of Cyprus and Aphrodite's priest, so he gave him this corslet as a guest present. Line 21. For the great fame and rumor of war had carried to Cyprus, how the Achaeans were to sail against Troy in their vessels. Therefore he gave the king as a gift of grace this corslet. Now there were 10 circles of deep cobalt upon it, and 12 of gold, and 20 of tin. And toward the opening at the throat, there were rearing up 3 serpents of cobalt on either side, like rainbows upon which the son of Cronos has marked upon the clouds to be a portent to mortals. This is a fascinating mention of rainbows as portent, rainbows carrying a message, probably reminiscent all the way back to Genesis 10 and 11. Line 28. Across his shoulders he slung the sword, and the nails upon it, the rivets, were golden and glittered, and closing about it the scabbard was silver, and gold was upon the sword straps that held it. And he took up the man enclosing elaborate stark shield, a thing of splendor. There were 10 circles of bronze upon it, and set about it were 20 knobs of 10, pale shining, and in the very center another knob of dark cobalt. These knobs would be ornamental studs. Line 36. And circled in the midst of all was the blank-eyed face of the Gorgon, with her stare of horror, and fear was inscribed upon it, and terror. The strap of the shield had silver upon it, and there also on it was coiled a cobalt snake. And there were 3 heads upon him, twisted to look backward, and grown from a single neck, all 3. Upon his head he set the helmet, 2-horned, 4-sheeted, with the horsehair crest, and the plumes nodded terribly above it. Then he caught up 2 strong spears, edged with sharp bronze, and the brazen heads flashed far from him deep into heaven. And so now Agamemnon finally has his armor on. Line 45. And Hera and Athena caused a crash of thunder about him, doing honor to the lord of deep golden Mycenae. This is in the middle of Agamemnon's Aristeia. His Aristeia begins at line 67 and will not end until 283 Right now, it's all about Agamemnon. Thereupon, each man gave orders to his charioteer to rein in the horses once again by the ditch in good order, while they themselves, dismounted and armed in their war gear, swept onward to the ditch, and their incessant clamor rose up in the morning. Line 51. In battle array, they came to the ditch well ahead of the horsemen, and the horsemen followed a little behind. And the son of Cronos drove down the evil turmoil upon them, and from aloft cast down dews, dripping blood from the sky, since he was minded to hurl down a multitude of strong heads to the house of Hades. On the other side of the ditch, at the break of the train, the Trojans gathered about tall Hector, and stately Polydamas, and Aeneas, this is who Virgil will write about later, and Aeneas, honored by Trojans in their countryside as a god is, and the three sons of Antenor, Polybus and brilliant Agenor, and Acamas, a young man still, in the likeness of the immortals. And Hector carried the perfect circle of his shield in the foremost, as among the darkened clouds the bale star, the baneful star, shows forth in all shining, then merges again in the clouds and the darkness. So Hector would at one time be shining among the foremost, and then once more urging on the last, and complete in bronze armor, glittered like the thunder flash of Zeus of the Aegis, our father. So Hector dashing in and out of the battle is like a star showing forth in the darkness and then in the light. Line 67. And the men, like two lines of reapers, this is what they're like two lines of reapers, who, facing each other, drive their course all down the field of wheat or of barley for a man blessed in substance, and the cut swaths drop showering, so Trojans and Achaeans, driving in against one another, cut men down, nor did either side think of disastrous panic. So these men are cutting one another down just like reapers do. That's the imagery here. The pressure held their heads on a line, and they whirled and fought like wolves, and hate, and the Lady of Sorrow, probably Eris, was gladdened to watch them. She alone of all the immortals attended this action, but the other immortals were not there, but sat quietly remote and apart in their palaces, where for each one of them a house had been built in splendor along the folds of Olympus. All were blaming the son of Cronos, Zeus of the dark mists, because his will was to give glory to the Trojans. To these gods the father gave no attention at all, but withdrawn from them, and rejoicing in the pride of his strength, sat apart from the others, looking out over the city of Troy and the ships of the Achaeans, watching the flash of the bronze, and men killing and men killed. So long as it was early morning, and the sacred daylight increasing, so long the thrown weapons of both took hold, and men dropped under them. But at that time, when the woodcutter makes ready his supper, that would be mid-morning, in the wooded glens of the mountains, when his arms and hands have grown weary from cutting down the tall trees, and his heart has had enough of it, and longing for food and for sweet wine takes hold of his senses, at that time, at noontime, the Danaans, by their manhood, broke the battalions, calling across the ranks to each other. First Agamemnon drove on and killed a man, Baynor, shepherd of the people himself, then his companion Oileus, lasher of horses, who, springing down from behind his horses, stood forth to face him. But Agamemnon stabbed straight at his face as he came on in fury with the sharp spear, nor did helm's bronze heavy edge hold it, but the spearhead passed through this, and the bone and the inward brain was all spattered forth. So he beat him down in his fury, and Agamemnon, the lord of men, left them lying there, and their white bodies showing, since he had stripped off their tunics. Then he went on to kill and strip Issus and Antiphus, two sons of Priam, bastard one and one lawful, both riding in a single chariot. So we notice the bastard son has the lower status. He drives for his brother. The bastard Issus was charioteer, and renowned Antiphus rode beside him. Before this, Achilles had caught these two at the knees of Ida, so the foothills of Ida, Achilles has already caught them once and ransomed them. And Achilles had caught these two at the knees of Ida, and bound them in pliant willows as they watched by their sheep, and released them for ransom. This time the son of Atreus, wide powerful Agamemnon, struck Issus with the thrown spear in the chest, above the nipple, and hit Antiphus by the ear with the sword and hurled him from his horses. And in eager haste he stripped off from these their glorious armor, which he knew he had seen these two before by the fast ships when Achilles of the swift feet had brought them in from Ida. And, what was it like, as a lion seizes the innocent young of the running deer and easily crunches and breaks them caught in the strong teeth when he has invaded their lair and rips out the soft heart from them, and even if the doe be very near, still she has no strength to help, for the ghastly shivers of fear are upon her also, and suddenly she dashes away through the glades and the timber, sweating in her speed away from the pounce of the strong beast. So there was no one of the Trojans who could save these two from death, but they themselves were running in fear from the Argives. Line 122. Next he caught Pisandrus and Hippocallus, stubborn in battle, sons of Antimachus the wise, who beyond all others had taken the gold of Alexandrus, glorious gifts, so that he had opposed the return of Helen to fair-haired Menelaus. Powerful Agamemnon caught his two sons riding in one chariot, who together guided the running horses. Now the glittering reins escaped from the hands of both of them, and they were stunned with fear, for against them rose like a lion Atreus's son, Agamemnon, and they supplicated him out of the chariot, "Take us alive, son of Atreus, and take appropriate ransom. In the house of Antimachus the treasure lies piled in abundance. Bronze is there, and gold, and difficultly wrought iron, and our father would make you glad with abundant repayment, were he to hear that we were alive by the ships of the Achaeans." Thus these two cried out upon the king, lamenting and in pitiful phrase, but they heard the voice that was without pity. "If in truth you are the sons of wise Antimachus, that man who once among the Trojans assembled advised them that Menelaus, who came as envoy with godlike Odysseus, should be murdered on the spot, nor let go back to the Achaeans. So now your mutilation shall punish the shame of your father." He spoke and spurned Pisandrus to the ground from the chariot with a spear stroke in the chest, and he crashed on his back to the ground. So we see here that Agamemnon knows these two sons, that their father was one when Odysseus and Menelaus came with an envoy and said, "Please give Helen back and the money you stole," that their father said, "No, keep all the gold," and so now he has just killed that man's sons. Line 145. Hippolochus sprang away, but Atreides killed him, dismounted, cutting away his arms with a sword stroke, free of the shoulder, and sent him spinning like a log down the battle. Thereafter he left them, and toward that place where the most battalions were shaken, drove, and beside him drove the rest of the strong grieved Achaeans, and footmen killed footmen who fled under strong compulsion, and riders killed riders, and a storm of dust rose up under them out of the plain, uplifted by the thundering feet of their horses. They killed with the bronze, and among them powerful Agamemnon went onward, all was slaying, and urged on the rest of the Argives. As when obliterating fire comes down on the timbered forest, another metaphor, and the roll of the wind carries it everywhere, and bushes leaning under the force of the fire's rush tumble uprooted, so before Atreus' son Agamemnon went down the high heads of the running Trojans, and in many places the strong neck horses rattled their empty chariots along the causeways of battle, and longed for their haughty charioteers, who were lying along the ground, to delight no longer their wives, but the vultures. But Zeus drew Hector out from under the dust and the missiles, out of the place where men were killed, the blood and confusion, while Atreides followed, urging the Danaans forever onward. The Trojans swept in their flight past the barrow of ancient Ilius. This is the grave of Priam's grandfather, the man who founded Troy. These are mentioned simply to just show the different features on the plain. So the Trojans swept in their flight past the barrow of ancient Ilus, Dardanus's son, to the center of the level ground and the fig tree as they made for the city. And he followed them all with screaming Atreus's son, his invincible hands spattered with bloody filth. But when they had made their way to the Scaean gates, the city gates, line 170, and the oak tree, the Trojans stood their ground, and each side endured the other. So now Agamemnon, apparently alone, has chased the Trojans all the way back to the gates of the city. And each side endured the other, while others still in the middle plain stampeded like cattle. And what? How did they stampede? Like cattle when a lion coming upon them in the dim night has terrified the whole herd, while for a single one sheer death is emerging. First the lion breaks her neck, caught fast in the strong teeth, and then gulps down the blood and all the guts that are inward. So Atreus' son, powerful Agamemnon, went after them, killing ever the last of the men, and they fled in terror. Many were hurled from behind their horses, face downward or sprawling, under the hands of Atreides, who raged with his spear in the forefront. Line 181. But when he was on the point of making his way to the city and the steep wall, the father of gods and of men, descending out of the sky, took his place along the ridges of Ida of the fountains, and held fast in his hands the thunderbolt. So Agamemnon's ready to go over the walls, and Zeus is going to stop him. He sent on her way Iris of the golden wings with a message. Go on your way, swift Iris, and carry my word to Hector. As long as he beholds Agamemnon, shepherd of the people, raging among the champions and cutting down the ranged fighters, so long let him hold back and urge on the rest of his people to fight against the enemy through this strong encounter. But when, either struck with a spear or hit with a flying arrow, he springs up behind his horses, then I guarantee power to Hector to kill men, till he makes his way to the strong benched vessels, until the sun goes down and the blessed darkness comes over. So Zeus tells Iris to take this message. Tell Hector that after Agamemnon is wounded, then he, Hector, will be winning again. Line 195. He spoke, and swift-footed Iris did not disobey him, but went down along the hills of Ida to sacred Ilion, and found the son of wise Priam, Hector the Brilliant, standing among the compacted chariots and by the horses. Iris, the swift of foot, came close beside and spoke to him. Hector, O son of Priam, and equal of Zeus in counsel, Zeus my father has sent me down to tell you this message. As long as you behold Agamemnon, shepherd of the people, raging among the champions and cutting down the ranged fighters, so long hold back from the fighting, but urge on the rest of your people to fight against the enemy through this strong encounter. But when, either struck with a spear or hit with a flying arrow, he springs up behind his horses, then Zeus guarantees power to you to kill men till you make your way to the strong benched vessels, until the sun goes down and the blessed darkness comes over. Line 210. Swiftfoot Iris spoke to him thus and went away from him, and Hector in all his armor leapt to the ground from his chariot, and shaking two sharp spears in his hand, ranged over the whole host, stirring them up to fight and waking the ghastly warfare. So they whirled about and stood their ground against the Achaeans, and the Argives against them pulled together their battle lines. So the fighting grew close, and they faced each other, and foremost Agamemnon drove on, trying to fight far ahead of all the others. Tell me now, you Muses. Here Homer again is invoking the Muse. This is a way to give importance to what he's going to say. Tell me now, you Muses, who have your homes on Olympus, who was the first to come forth and stand against Agamemnon of the very Trojans, or their renowned companions in battle? Iphidamas, Antenor's son, the huge and stalwart, who had been reared in generous Thrace, the mother of sheep flocks. Cisseus had raised him in his own house when he was little, his mother's father, whose child was Theano, the girl of the fair cheeks. But when he had arrived at the stature of powerful manhood, Cisseus detained him there and gave him his daughter. Married, he went away from the bride chamber, looking for glory from the Achaeans, with 12 curved ships that followed with him. These balanced vessels he had left behind in Percote, and gone himself to fight on foot at Ilion, and there he came face to face with Atreus' son, Agamemnon. Now when these in their advance were close to each other, the son of Atreus missed with his throw, and the spear was turned past him. But Iphidamas stabbed to the belt underneath the corslet, and leaned in on the stroke in the confidence of his strong hand, but could not get clean through the bright war belt. Far sooner the spear point, pushed against the silver, bent back like soft lead. And in his hand, wide powerful Agamemnon catching it, dragged it against him, raging like a lion, and tore it out of his hand, then struck the neck with his sword and unstrung him. So Iphidamas fell there and went into the brazen slumber, unhappy, who came to help his own people and left his young wife a bride and had known no delight from her yet and given much for her. How much did he give for her? Now we're going to hear about the bride price. First, he had given 100 oxen, then promised 1,000 heads of goat and sheep, which were herded for him in abundance. Now Agamemnon, son of Atreus, stripped him and went back to the throng of the Achaeans, bearing the splendid armor. When Coon, conspicuous among the fighters, perceived him, he who was Antenor's eldest born, the strong sorrow misted about his eyes for the sake of his fallen brother. He came from the side and unobserved at great Agamemnon and stabbed with his spear at the middle arm underneath the elbow, and the head of the glittering spear cut its way clean through. So Agamemnon now is wounded by the bridegroom's older brother. Agamemnon, the lord of men, shuddered with fear then, but even so did not give up the attack or his fighting, but sprang at Coon, gripping a spear that struck with the wind's speed. Now Coon was dragging his father's son, his brother Iphidamas, by the foot back eagerly, and cried on at all the bravest. But as he dragged him into the crowd, as he's dragging his brother away, Agamemnon thrust at him with the smooth bronze spear underneath the knobbed shield, and unstrung him, then came up and hewed off his head over Iphidamas. There under the king, Atreus' son, the sons of Antenor, filled out their destiny and went down to the house of the death god. But Agamemnon ranged the ranks of the other fighters with spear and sword and with huge stones that he flung, for such time as the blood was still running warm from the spear wound. But after the sore place was dry and the flow of blood stopped, the sharp pains began to break in on the strength of Atreides. So as the shock wears off, Agamemnon now is feeling the pain of his wound. And what's it compared to a woman in labor? So as the flow of blood stopped, the sharp pains began to break in on the strength of Atreides. As the sharp sorrow of pain descends on a woman in labor, the bitterness that the hard spirits of childbirth bring on, Hera's daughters who hold the power of the bitter birth pangs, so the sharp pains began to break in on the strength of Atreides. He sprang back into the car, the chariot, and called to his charioteer to drive him back to the hollow ships, since his heart was heavy. Line 275. He lifted his voice and called in a piercing cry to the Danaans, "Friends, O leaders and men of council among the Argives, you must still continue to defend our seafaring vessels from the wearying attack, since Zeus of the councils would not allow me to do battle day long against the Trojans." He spoke, and the charioteer lashed on the bright-maned horses back toward the hollow ships, and they winged their way unreluctant. The foam ran down their chests. They were powdered with dust from beneath them as they carried the stricken king away from the fighting. When Hector was aware of Agamemnon withdrawing, he called out in a great voice to Trojans and Lycians, "Trojans, Lycians, and Dardanians who fight at close quarters, be men now, dear friends, remember your furious valor. Their best man is gone, and Zeus, Cronus' son, has consented to my great glory. But steer your single-footed horses straight on at the powerful Danaans, so win you the higher glory." So he spoke and stirred the spirit and strength in each man. What was it like? As when some huntsman drives to action his hounds with shining teeth against some savage beast, wild boar or lion, so against the Achaeans, Hector, the son of Priam, a man like the murderous war god, that'd be Ares, lashed on the high-hearted Trojans, and he himself, with high thoughts, strode out in the foremost and hurled himself on the struggle of men like a high-blown storm cloud. What was it like when he hurled himself? Like a high-blown storm cloud which swoops down from above to trouble the blue sea water. Who then was the first, and who the last, that he slaughtered? Hector, Priam's son, now that Zeus granted his glory. This rhetorical question just highlights the story coming. Asias first, And then Autonoeus and Opites and Dolops and Clytius' son, Opheltius and Aglaus and Asiminus and Orus and Hipponaeus, stubborn in battle. And I made up all the pronunciations of those names. He killed these who were lords of the Danans, and thereafter the multitude, what was the multitude like? As when the west wind strikes in the deepening whirlstorm to batter the clouds of the shining south wind, so that the bulging big waves roll hard, and the blown spume scatters high before the force of the veering wind's blast, that's what it was like, so the massed high heads of the people were struck down by Hector, line 310. And now there might have been havoc, and hopeless things done. Now the running Achaeans might have tumbled back into their own ships had not Odysseus cried out to Tydeus' son Diomedes, "Son of Tydeus, what has happened to us that we have forgotten our fighting strength? Come here and stand with me, brother. There must be shame on us if Hector of the glancing helm captures our vessels." Then in answer, powerful Diomedes spoke to him, "Yes, I will stand with you and take what I must. Yet we shall not have our way for long, since Zeus the cloud-gatherer would wish to give the power to the Trojans rather than to us." In other words, when Diomedes says this to Odysseus, he says, we're not losing because we lack might, but because Zeus has ordained this. Rather convenient. He spoke, line 320, and hurled down Phambraeus to the ground from his horses with a stroke of the spear by the left nipple. Meanwhile, Odysseus killed this lord of battle's henchmen, godlike Molion. They left these to lie there, since they had ended their fighting, then went into the ranks and wrought havoc. What was it like, Odysseus and Diomedes fighting together? As when two wild boars hurl themselves in the pride upon the hounds who pursue them? So these two whirled on the Trojans again and destroyed them. Meanwhile, the Achaeans gladly drew breath again after their flight from the great Hector. There they took a chariot and two men, lords in their countryside, sons both of Merops and Percote, who beyond all men knew the art of prophecy, and tried to prevent his two sons from going into the battle where men die. Yet these would not listen, for the spirits of dark death were driving them onwards. Tydeus' son Diomedes of the renowned spear stripped them of life and spirit and took away their glorious armor, while Odysseus killed Hypericus and Hippodamus. There the son of Cronos strained the battle even between them as he looked down from Ida. They went on killing each other. Now Tydeus' son stabbed with the spear Agastrophus, a chief and son of Paeon, striking at the hip joint. His horses were not by for his escape, but he, strongly infatuate, had a henchman holding them aside, while he, dismounted, raged on among the champions, until so he lost his dear life. Hector saw it sharply across the ranks, and rose up against them with a great cry, and behind him came on the Trojan battalions. Diomedes of the great war cry shivered as he saw him, and suddenly he spoke to Odysseus as he came near. "Here is this curse, Hector the huge, wheeling down upon us. Let us stand and hold our ground against him, and beat him off from us." So he spoke, and balanced the spear far-shadowed, and threw it aiming at the head, and struck against his mark, nor missed it, at the high peak of the helm. But the bronze from the bronze was driven back, not reaching his shining skin. The helmet guarded it, the three-ply helmet, and hollow-eyed, which Phoebus Apollo gave him. But Hector sprang far away back and merged among his own people, and dropping to one knee, stayed leaning on the ground with his heavy hand, and a covering of black night came over both eyes. But while the son of Tydeus was following his spear's cast, far through the front fighters where it fixed in the earth, meanwhile Hector got his wind again, and springing back into his chariot, drove back into the multitude and avoided the dark death. Then, shaking his spear, powerful Diomedes called to him, "Once again now you escaped death, dog, and yet the evil came near you. But now once more Phoebus Apollo has saved you, he to whom you must pray when you go into the thunder of spears thrown. Yet I may win you if I encounter you ever hereafter, if beside me also there is some god who will help me. Now I must chase whoever I can overtake of the others." He spoke, and set about stripping the spear-famed son of Paeon. But now Alexandrus, the lord of lovely-haired Helen, pulled his bow. Notice Alexandrus is fighting with a bow and arrow. Pulled his bow against Tydeus' son, the shepherd of the people, leaning against the column, work of men's hands, on the grave mound of Ilus, Dardanus' son. So he's hiding in the cemetery. An elder of the folk in the old days. Now Diomedes was stripping the corslet of strong Agastrophos from about his chest, and the shining shield from his shoulders, and the heavy helm as the other pulled his bow at the hand grip and shot. And the arrow escaping his hand flew not vain, but struck the flat of the right foot. So Paris strikes Diomedes' foot with this arrow. Struck the flat of the right foot, and the shaft driven clean through stuck in the ground. Then Alexandrus, laughing merrily, sprang from his hiding place and cried out his speech in triumph. You're hit, and my arrow flew not in vain. How I wish I had struck you in the depth of the belly and torn the life from you. So the Trojans, who shudder before you as bleating goats do before a lion, would have got their wind again after disaster. Then, not at all frightened, strong Diomedes answered him, You archer, foul fighter, lovely in your locks, ire of young girls, if you were to make trial of me in strong combat with weapons, your bow would do you no good at all, nor your close-showered arrows. Now you have scratched the flat of my foot, and even boast of this. I care no more than if a witless child or a woman had struck me. This is the blank weapon of a useless man, no fighter. But if one is struck by me only a little, that is far different. The stroke is a sharp thing, and suddenly lays him lifeless. And that man's wife goes with cheeks torn in lamentation, and his children are fatherless, while he, staining the soil with his red blood, rots away, and there are more birds than women swarming about him. So Diomedes, this arrow is clear through his foot and into the ground, and Paris is chirping about how thrilled he is, not acting at all like a brave warrior, and Diomedes says, You're nothing. Line 396. He spoke, and Odysseus, the fear-famed, coming up from nearby, stood in front. So he sat down behind him and pulled out the sharp arrow from his foot, and the hard pain came over his flesh. He sprang back into the car and called to his charioteer to drive him back to the hollow ships, since his heart was heavy. Now Odysseus, the spear-famed, was left alone. Agamemnon and Diomedes of the hall had to go back for medical care. Now Odysseus the spear-famed was left alone, nor did any of the Argives stay beside him, since fear had taken all of them. This means Odysseus is standing out there, cut off from all the Greeks and surrounded. Ah me, what will become of me, says Odysseus. It will be a great evil if I run, fearing their multitude, yet deadlier if I am caught alone, and Cronus' son drove to flight the rest of the Danaans. This is a very famous speech of Odysseus, and he's calmly deciding what to do. Yet still, why does the heart within me debate on these things, since I know that it is the cowards who walk out of the fighting, but if one is to win honor in battle, he must by all means stand his ground strongly, whether he be struck or strike down another. While he was pondering these things in his heart, and his spirit, the ranks of the armored Trojans, came on against him and pinned him in their midst, but made thereby a wound in their ranks. And what was it like? They had one wound in their ranks, one open place. What was it like? As when closing about a wild boar, the hounds and the lusty young men rush him, and he comes out of his lair in the deep of a thicket, grinding to an edge the white fangs in the crook of the jawbones, and these sweep in all about him. The vaunt of his teeth uprises as they await him. Terrible though he is without wavering, so closing on Odysseus, beloved of Zeus, the Trojans rushed him. First he stabbed lordly Diopites in the shoulder, lunging from above with a stroke of the sharp spear, and after him he killed Thoon and Enemus, and next stabbed Chersidamus as he sprang down from behind his horses, in the navel with a spear stroke underneath the massive shield, and he, dropping in the dust, clawed the ground with his hand. These he left lying and stabbed with the spear the son Hippasus, Cherops, full brother of Sacchus, a man rich in substance. And Sacchus moved in, a man like a god, to stand over his fallen brother, and came and stood close by Odysseus, and spoke a word to him. Honored Odysseus, insatiable of guile and endeavor. Today you will have two sons of Hippasus to vaunt over for having killed two such men as we, and stripping our armor, or else, stricken underneath my spear, you might lose your own life. So here's the enemy who's come near to Odysseus to say, basically, Sacas says to Odysseus, either you're going to kill me or I'm going to kill you. Either way, I suppose, it's a great honor. Line 434. He spoke and stabbed Odysseus's shield in its perfect circle. All the way through the glittering shield went the heavy spearhead and crashed its way through the intricately wrought corslet, and all the skin was torn away from his ribs. Yet Pallas Athena would not let the point penetrate the man's vitals. Odysseus saw that the fatal end had not yet come to him. Remember, Athena is always watching out for her favorite Odysseus. But now we have Menelaus, now we have Agamemnon and Diomedes injured. All the way through, I read that part. Line 440. And he drew back. The end had not yet come to him, and drew back and spoke a word to Sacas. Ah, wretch, surely now steep destruction is advancing upon you. It is true, you have stopped my fighting against the Trojans, but I declare that here and now dark death and slaughter will come upon you this day, and that beaten down under my spear. You will give glory, Kleos, to me, and your life to Hades of the horses. He spoke, and Sacas, turning from him, was striding in flight, but in his back, even as he was turning, the spear fixed between the shoulders and was driven on through the chest beyond it. He fell thunderously, and great Odysseus boasted over him. Sacas, son of wise Hippasus, the breaker of horses, death was too quick for you and ran you down. You could not avoid it, wretch, since now your father and your honored mother will not be able to close your eyes in death. But the tearing birds will get you, with their wings close beating about you. If I die, the brilliant Achaeans will bury me in honor. So he spoke, and dragged the heavy spear of wise Sacas out of his flesh and out of the shield massive in the middle. As it was torn out, the blood sprang, and his heart was sickened. But the great-hearted Trojans, when they saw the blood of Odysseus, he had to pull the spear out himself, cried aloud through the close battle, and all made a charge against him. He gave back a little way and called out for his companions. Three times he called, as much voice as a man's head could hold, and three times Menelaus the warlike heard him shouting, and immediately spoke to Aias, who was nearby him. Son of Telamon, seed of Zeus, Aias, lord of the people, the war cry of patient Odysseus is ringing about me with a sound as if he had been cut off by himself, and the Trojans were handling him violently in the strong encounter. Therefore, let us go to him through the battle. It is better to defend him against them. I fear that, caught alone, he may be hurt by the Trojans, brave as he is, and so a great loss may befall the Danaans. He spoke and led the way, and the other followed, a mortal like a god. They found Odysseus, beloved of Zeus, and around him the Trojans crowded. How were the Trojans crowded around him? As bloody scavengers in the mountains crowd on a horned stag who is stricken, one whom a hunter shot with an arrow from the string, and the stag has escaped him, running with his feet, while the blood stayed warm and his knees were springing beneath him. But when the pain of the arrow finally has beaten him, then the rending scavengers begin to feast on him in the mountains and the shaded glen. But some spirit leads that way a dangerous lion, and the scavengers run in terror, and the lion eats it. So about much wise, much devising Odysseus, the Trojans crowded now, valiant and numerous, but the hero with rapid play of his spear beat off the pitiless death day. Now Aias came near him, carrying like a wall his shield, and stood forth beside him, and the Trojans fled one way and another. Then taking Odysseus by the hand, warlike Menelaus led him from the battle, while his henchmen drove the horses close up. But Aias, leaping upon the Trojans, struck down Doryclus, Priam's son, but a bastard, and thereafter stabbed Pandacus, and also Lysandrus, and Pirasus, and Pilartes. What was that like? As when a swollen river hurls its water big with rain down the mountains to the flat land, following rain from the sky god, and sweeps down with it numbers of dry oaks and of pine trees, numbers until it hurls its huge driftwood into the salt sea. So now glittering Aias cumbered the plain as he chased them, slaughtering men and horses alike. Nor yet had Hector heard, since he was fighting at the left of the entire battle by the banks of the Scamandrous River, where more than elsewhere the high heads of men were dropping, and the tireless clamor rising about tall Nestor and Idomeneus the warlike. Now Hector was encountering these and doing grim work with spear and horsemanship, ruining the battalions of young men. Yet even so the Achaeans would not have given from his path had not Alexandrus, the lord of lovely-haired Helen, stayed from his bravery the shepherd of the people, Machaon, that's the Greek surgeon, hitting him with a three-barbed arrow in the right shoulder. And the Achaeans, whose wind was fury, were frightened for him, that the enemy might catch him in the back turn of the fighting. At once Idomeneus called out to brilliant Nestor, "Nestor, son of Neleus, great glory of the Achaeans, quick, get up on your chariot. Let Machaon beside you mount and steer your single-footed horses to the ships in all speed. A healer is a man worth many in his knowledge of cutting out arrows and putting kindly medicines on wounds." He spoke, and the Dranian horseman Nestor obeyed him. Immediately he mounted the chariot, and Machaon, son of the great healer Asclepius, mounted beside him. He lashed on the horses, and they winged their way unreluctant back toward the hollow ships, since this was the way they desired. "Now, Cebriones," this is Hector is now on his third charioteer, "now Cebriones, who saw how the Trojans were being driven, and who stood beside Hector in the chariot, spoke a word to him. Hector, you and I encounter the Danaans at the utmost edge of the sorrowful battle, but meanwhile the rest of the Trojans are driven pell-mell upon each other, the men and their horses. The Telamonian Aias drives them. I know him surely, for he carries the broad shield on his shoulders. So let us also steer our horses and chariot that way, since there the horsemen and the foot ranks, more than elsewhere, hurling the wicked war hate against each other, are destroying, and the ceaseless clamor has risen." So he spoke, and lashed forward the bright-maned horses with the singing whip, and they at the feel of the stroke lightly carried the running chariot among Achaeans and Trojans, trampling down dead men and shields, and the axle under the chariot was all splashed with blood, and the rails which encircled the chariot, struck by flying drops from the feet of the horses, from the running rims of the wheels. So Hector was straining to plunge in the turmoil of men and charge them and break them. He hurled the confusion of disaster upon the Danaans, and stayed from the spear's stroke little, but with his spear and his sword, and with huge stones flung, ranged about among the ranks of the rest of the fighters, yet kept clear still of the attack of Telamonian Aias. But Father Zeus, who sits on high, drove fear upon Aias. He stood stunned, and swung the sevenfold oxhide shield behind him, and drew back, throwing his eyes round the crowd of men, like a wild beast, turning on his way, shifting knee past knee, only a little. And we're going to have the Aristeia of Aias. He's stunned. He swings his shield behind him, like around his back, as though almost like a retreat, like a wild beast. And now we come into what's known as the Aristeia of Aias, or Ajax. What was it like as he did this? As when the men who live in the wild and their dogs have driven a tawny lion away from the mid-fenced ground of their oxen and will not let him tear out the fat of the oxen, watching night long against him, and he in his hunger for meat closes in but can get nothing of what he wants, for the raining javelins thrown from the daring hands of the men beat ever against him, and the flaming torches, and these he balks at for all of his fury, and with the daylight goes away, disappointed of desire. So Aias, disappointed at heart, drew back from the Trojans, much unwilling, but feared for the ships of the Achaeans. What was it like? He's afraid for the ships of the Achaeans. And this is Homer making a joke, that the Trojans can only drive Aias out when he wanted to leave anyway. What was it like? As when a donkey, stubborn and hard to move, goes into a cornfield in despite of boys, and many sticks have been broken upon him, but he gets in and goes on eating the deep grain, and the children beat him with sticks, but their strength is infantile. Yet at last, by hard work, they drive him out when he's glutted with eating. So the donkey leaves because he's full. So the high-hearted Trojans and companions in arms, gathered from far places, kept after great Aias, the son of Telamon, stabbing us always with their spears at the center of the great shield. And now Aias would remember again his furious valor and turn upon them and beat back the battalions of Trojans, breakers of horses, and then again would turn and run from them. He blocked them all from making their way on to the fast ships, and himself stood and fought on in the space between the Achaeans and Trojans, and of the spears thrown by the daring hands of the fighters, some that were driven forward struck fast in the great shield, others, and many in the mid-space before they had got to his white skin, stood fast in the ground, though they had been straining to reach his body. Now, as Eurypylos, the glorious son of Eumaeon, saw how Aias was being overpowered by the dense spears, he came and stood beside him, and made a cast with his bright spear, and struck Apison, son of Phocius, shepherd of the people, in the liver under the midriff, and at once took the strength from his knees. Eurypylos, springing forward, stripped the armor from his shoulders, but godlike Alexandrus watched him as he was stripping the armor of Apison, and at once drew his bow and shot at Eurypylos and hit him in the right thigh with the arrow, and the reed shaft was broken off, and his thigh was heavy with pain. To avoid death, he shrank into the host of his own companions. He lifted his voice and called in a piercing cry to the Danaans, "Friends, O leaders and men of counsel among the Argives, turn again and stand and beat off the pitiless death day from Aias, who is being overpowered with spears thrown, and I think he cannot escape out of this sorrowful battle. Therefore stand fast and face them around great Aias, the son of Telamon." So spoke wounded Eurypylos, and the others about him stood in their numbers and sloped their shields over his shoulders, holding the spears away, and Aias came back to join them. He turned and stood when he had got back to the swarm of his own companions. So they fought on in the likeness of blazing fire, and meanwhile the horses of Neleus, sweating, carried Nestor away from the fighting, and carried also the shepherd of the people, Machaon, the doctor. Now swift-footed, brilliant Achilles saw him and watched him, for he was standing on the stern of his huge hollowed vessel, looking out over the sheer war work and the sorrowful onrush. Interesting that though Achilles refuses to fight, fighting is his life. He misses the battle so much, he's watching it. Line 601. At once he spoke to his own companion in arms, Patroclus, calling from the ship, and he heard it from inside the shelter and came out like the war god, and this was the beginning of his evil. The strong son of Menoetius, this is Patroclus, spoke first and addressed him, "What do you wish with me, Achilles? Why do you call me?" Then in answer again spoke Achilles of the swift feet, "Son of Menoetius, you who delight my heart, O great one, and now I think the Achaeans will come to my knees and stay there in supplication, for a need past endurance has come to them." This is fascinating because in his arrogance, Achilles ignores the event of the embassy in Book 9 as though they had never come and begged him. He says, now they're going to come and beg me. Line 610. "But go now, Patroclus, beloved of Zeus, to Nestor, and ask him who is this wounded man he brings in from the fighting. Indeed, seeing him from behind, I thought he looked like Machaon, Asclepius's son, in all ways, but I got no sight of the man's face, since the horses were tearing forward and swept on by me." So he wants to know who it was that got wounded. So he spoke, and Patroclus obeyed his beloved companion and went on the run along the shelters and ships of the Achaeans. Now when the others came to the shelter of the son of Neleus, Nestor, they themselves dismounted to the prospering earth, and the henchman Eurymedon unharnessed the horses of the old man from the chariot. The men wiped off the sweat on their tunics and stood to the wind beside the beach of the sea, and thereafter went inside the shelter and took their places on settles, on chairs. And lovely-haired Hecamede made them a potion, she whom the old man had won from Tenedos, she was a prize, when Achilles stormed it. She was the daughter of great-hearted Arsinous. The Achaeans chose her out for Nestor, because he was best of them all in council. First, she pushed up the table in front of them, a lovely table, polished and with feet of cobalt, and on it she laid a bronze basket, with onion to go with the drinking, and pale honey, and beside it bread, blessed pride of the barley, and beside it a beautifully wrought cup, which the old man brought with him. This description of Nestor's cup, beginning here in Book 11, beginning line 631, is pretty much identical with a cup that Heinrich Schliemann found in the fourth shaft grave at Mycenae. This now is in Athens National Archaeological Museum in Athens. So definitely, this is a Mycenaean age cup. Fascinating. The cup. Beside it, a beautifully wrought cup, which the old man brought with him from home. And what does the cup look like? It was set with golden nails, studs. The eared handles upon it were four, and on either side there were fashioned two doves of gold, feeding, and there were double bases beneath it. Another man with great effort could lift it full from the table, but Nestor, aged as he was, lifted it without strain. In this the woman, like the immortals, mixed them a potion with Pramian wine and grated goat's milk cheese into it with a bronze grater, and scattered with her hand white barley into it. When she had got the potion ready, she told them to drink it, and both, when they had drunk it, were rid of their thirsts parching, and began to take pleasure in conversation, talking with each other. And Patroclus came and stood, a godlike man, in the doorway. Seeing him, the old man started up from his shining chair, and took him by the hand, led him in, and told him to sit down. But Patroclus, from the other side, declined, and spoke to him, "No chair, aged sir, beloved of Zeus, you will not persuade me. Honored and quick to blame is the man who sent me to find out who was this wounded man you were bringing. Now I myself know, and I see, it is Machaon, the shepherd of the people. Now I go back as messenger to Achilles to tell him." This particular potion, the potion of wine, grated cheese, and barley, this same potion, when we get to the Odyssey in Book 10, Circe will mix this same potion up for Odysseus and his friends. Line 2. "You know yourself, aged sir, beloved of Zeus, how he is. So Patroclus is sent on a mission from Achilles to find out who is injured. Now he knows that he must get back right away. He certainly can't sit down. You know yourself, aged sir, beloved of Zeus, how he is, a dangerous man. He might even be angry with one who is guiltless." Then in turn the Geranian horseman Nestor answered him. Line 655. "Now why is Achilles being so sorry for the sons of Achaeans who've been wounded with spears thrown, he who knows nothing of the sorrow that has risen along the host, since the bravest are lying up among the ships with arrow or spear wounds? The son of Tydeus, strong Diomedes, was hit by an arrow, and Odysseus has a pike wound, and Agamemnon, the spear-famed, and Eurypylos has been wounded in the thigh with an arrow, and even now I have brought this other one, Machaon, out of the fighting, hit by an arrow from the bowstring. Meanwhile Achilles, brave as he is, cares nothing for the Danaans, nor pities them. Is he going to wait then till the running ships by the water are burned with consuming fire for all the Argives can do? Till we ourselves are killed one after another, since there is not any longer in my gnarled limbs the strength that there once was?" And now we have another Nestor speech of, "If only I were young." And Nestor, "If only I were young now, and the strength still steady within me, as," and he's going to tell a time of when he was young, how strong he was, "as that time when a quarrel was made between us and the Eleans over a driving of cattle, when I myself killed Atymnius, the brave son of Hipparchus, who made his home in Elis. I was driving cattle in reprisal, and he, as he was defending his oxen, was struck among the foremost by a spear thrown from my hand and fell, and his people who live in the wild fled in terror about him. As we got and drove off together much spoil from this pastureland, 50 herd of oxen, as many sheep flocks, as many droves of pigs, and again as many wide-ranging goat flocks, and 150 brown horses, mares all of them, and many with foals following underneath. And all there we drove inside the keep of Neleon Pylos." This would be what belongs to Neleus, Nestor's father. "Inside the keep of Neleon Pylos, making our way nightwise to the town. And Neleus was glad in his heart that so much had come my way, who was young to go to the fighting. And next day, as dawn showed, the heralds lifted their clear cry for all to come who had anything owed them in shining Elis. And the men who were chiefs among the Pylians assembling divided the spoil. There were many to whom the Epeans owed something, since we in Pylos were few, and we had been having the worst of it. For Heracles had come in his strength against us and beaten us in the years before, and all the bravest among us had been killed. For we, who were sons of lordly Neleus, had been 12, and now I alone was left of these, and all the others had perished and grown haughty. Over this the bronze-armored Epeans despised and outraged us and devised wicked actions against us. So Nestor is the only son left out of 12, killed by Heracles. Now the old man took for himself a herd of cattle and a big flock of sheep, choosing out 300 of them along with the shepherds. For indeed a great debt was owing to him in shining Elis. It was 4 horses, race competitors with their own chariot. So this is a unique chariot that has 4 horses with it, who were on their way to a race and were to run for a tripod. So the prize was a tripod. But Augeas, the lord of men, took those and kept them and sent away their driver, who was vexed for the sake of the horses. Augeas was a king of Elis. That was one of Heracles' 12 labors, was to clean the Augean stables. Now aged Neleus, angry over things said and things done, took a vast amount for himself and gave the rest to the people to divide among them, so none might go away without a just share. So we administered all this spoil, and all through the city wrought sacrifices to the gods. And on the 3rd day the Epeans came all against us, numbers of men and single-footed horses in full haste, and among them were armored the 2 Moleons. And these apparently, if you take a look at Iliad book 23, lines 638 through 42, these are Siamese twins. The 2 Moleons, boys still, not yet altogether skilled in furious fighting. There's a city, Thyrisia, a headlong hill town far away from Alpheus at the bottom of sandy Pylos. They had thrown their encampment about that place, furious to smash it. But when they had swept the entire plain, Athena came running to us, a messenger from Olympus by night, and warned us to arm. It was no hesitant host she assembled in Pylos, but people straining hard toward the battle. Now Neleus would not let me be armed among them, and had hidden away my horses, because he thought I was not yet skilled in the work of warfare. Even so, I was preeminent among our own horsemen, though I went on foot, since thus Athena guided the battle. There is a river, Minyeus, which empties its water in the sea beside Erene. There we waited for the divine dawn, we horsemen among the Pylians, and the hordes of the streaming foot soldiers. And from there, having armed in all speed and formed in our armor, we came by broad daylight to the sacred stream of Alpheus. There we wrought fine sacrifice to Zeus in his great strength, and sacrificed a bull to Alpheus, a bull to Poseidon, but to Athena of the gray eyes, a cow from the herds, so they're very pious. Then we took our dinner along the host in divided watches, and went to sleep, each man in his own armor, by the current of the river, and meanwhile the high-hearted Epeans had taken their places around the city, furious to smash it. But sooner than this there was shown forth a great work of the war god, for when the sun in his shining lifted above the earth, then we joined our battle together with prayers to Zeus and Athena. Now when the battle came on between the Pylians and Epeans, I was the first to kill a man, and I won his single-footed horses. It was Muleus, the spearman, who was son-in-law to Augeas, the Aegean of the Aegean stables, and had his wife, his eldest daughter, fair-haired Egamede, who knew of all the medicines that are grown in the broad earth. As he came on, I threw and hit him with the bronze-headed spear, and he dropped in the dust, whereupon I, springing into his chariot, took my place among the champions, as the high-hearted Epeans fled one way and another in terror when they saw the man fall who was the leader of their horsemen and the best of them all in fighting. Then I charged upon them like a black whirlwind and overtook 50 chariots, and for each of the chariots 2 men caught the dirt in their teeth, beaten down under my spear. And now I would have killed the young Molinos, scions of Actor, had not their father, who shakes the earth in his wide strength, caught them out of the battle, shrouding them in a thick mist. Then Zeus gave huge power into the hands of the Pylians, for we chased them on over the hollow plain, killing the men themselves, and picking up their magnificent armor until we brought our horses to Bropreson of the wheat fields of the Olenian rock, where there's a hill called the Hill of Eleusis. There, at last, Athena turned back our people. There I killed my last man and left him. There the Achaeans steered back from Buprasen to Pylos their fast-running horses, and all glorified Zeus among the gods, but among men, Nestor. That was I, among men, if it ever happened. But Achilles will enjoy his own valor in loneliness, though I think he will weep much too late when his people are perished from him. Dear child, surely this was what Menoetius told you that day when he sent you out from Phthia to Agamemnon. So Nestor is recalling to Patroclus the time before the Trojan War when he, Nestor, and Odysseus went all around Greece and collected the Achaean army. Surely this is what Menoetius, your dad, told you that day when he sent you out from Phthia to Agamemnon. We too, brilliant Odysseus and I, were inside with you and listened carefully to everything, all that he told you. For we had come to the strong established house of Peleus, assembling fighting men, all through generous Achaea. We came there and found the hero Menoetius inside, and you, Achilles, beside you, and Peleus, the aged horseman, was burning the fat thigh pieces of an ox to Zeus, who delights in the thunder, in the garth of the courtyard. He was holding a golden beaker and pouring the bright wine over the burning dedications. You two were over the meat of the ox attending to it, and we came and stood in the forecourt, and Achilles sprang up wondering and took us by the hand and led us in, and told us to sit down and set hospitality, Xenia, properly before us, as is the stranger's right. Now, when we had taken our pleasure of eating and drinking, I began to talk, and invited you both to come with us, and you were altogether willing, and your fathers spoke to you, and Peleus the aged was telling his own son Achilles to be always best in battle and preeminent beyond all others. But for you, Menoetius, Actor's son, had this to say to you: My child, by right of blood Achilles is higher than you are, but you are the elder. Yet in strength he is far the greater. You must speak solid words to him and give him good counsel and point his way. If he listens to you, it will be good for his own good. This is what the old man told you. You have forgotten, says Neleus to Patroclus. Yet even now you might speak to wise Achilles. He might be persuaded. Who knows if, with God's helping, you might trouble his spirit by entreaty, make him feel guilty, since the persuasion of a young friend is a strong thing. But if he is drawing back from some prophecy known in his heart, and by Zeus's will his honored mother has told him of something, which is true, let him send you out at least, and the rest of the Myrmidon people follow you, and you may be a light given to the Danaans. So now we see that this suggestion is from Nestor. Nestor suggested Patroclus that he could go out wearing Achilles' armor and scare everybody. And let him give you his splendid armor to wear to the fighting, if perhaps the Trojans might think you are he and give way from their attack, and the fighting sons of the Achaeans get wind again after hard work. There is little breathing space in the fighting. You, unwearied, might with a mere cry pile men wearied back upon their city and away from the ships and the shelters. So he spoke and stirred the feeling in the breast of Patroclus. And he went on the run along the ships to the son of Icus, Achilles, line 805. But as Patroclus came in his running to the ships of great Odysseus, where the Achaeans had their assembly and dealt out rites, and where were established their altars to the immortals, there Eurypylus, who had been wounded in the thigh with an arrow, met him, the illustrious son of Eumaeon, limping away from battle, and the watery sweat was running down his shoulders and face, and from the sore wound dark blood continued to drip, and yet the will stayed steady within him. And the strong son of Menoetius, Patroclus, looked on him in pity and was sorrowful over him, and addressed him in winged words, "Poor wretches, you leaders of the men of counsel among the Danaans, was it your fate then, far from your friends and the land of your fathers, to glut with your shining fat the running dogs here in Troyland? But tell me this, my lord Eurypylus, grown under God's hand, will the Achaeans somehow be able to hold huge Hector, or must they now perish, beaten down under his spear?" Then Eurypylus, who was wounded, answered him in turn, "No longer, illustrious Patroclus, can the Achaeans defend themselves, but they will be piled back into their black ships, for all of these who were before the bravest in battle are lying up among the ships with arrow or spear wounds under the hands of the Trojans, whose strength is forever on the uprise. But help save me now at last, leading me away to my black ship, and cut the arrow out of my thigh, wash the dark blood running out of it with warm water, and put kind medicines on it, good ones, which they say you have been told of by Achilles, since Chiron, the most righteous of the centaurs, told him about them." Because, of course, the centaur is a healer. "As for Machaon and Pilarius, who are healers, I think Machaon has got a wound and is in the shelters lying there, and himself is in need of a blameless healer, while the other in the plain is standing the bitter attack of the Trojans. Then in turn the strong son of Menoetus spoke to him, "But how shall this be, my lord Eurypylus? How shall we do it? I am on my way carrying a message to wise Achilles, given me by Geranian Nestor, the Achaeans' watcher. But even so, I will not leave you in your affliction." He spoke, and holding the shepherd of the host under the arms, led him to his shelter, and a henchman, seeing them, spread out some ox hides, and Patroclus laid him there, and with a knife cut the sharp tearing arrow out of his thigh, and washed the black blood running from it with warm water, and, pounding it up in his hands, laid on a bitter root to make pain disappear, one which stayed all kinds of pain, and the wound dried, and the flow of blood stopped. And that is the end of Book 11.